Hello, and welcome to episode 16 of XR Connections, a podcast about VR, AR, MR, XR, extended reality. I'm your host, Liam O'Malley. On this episode, we have Bernard Francois of Preview Labs. Bernard and I met virtually at the AWE conference, which was held between May 26th and 29th. Following that conference, there was the VR-AR Association's Global Summit, which was also held online. I'll be speaking more about both of those conferences in a future episode. But for now, we have Bernard Francois speaking about rapid prototyping, how he got started in game development, and then VR and AR, the challenges and the benefits of rapid prototyping for XR projects, his experience at AWE online conference, and what's exciting him in XR technology developments this year. Here he is, Bernard Francois.
Hi, and welcome to XR Connections podcast. Bernard Francois. Bernard is the founder of Preview Labs. I saw Bernard give a presentation online at the AWE conference. We connected later, and I thought that Bernard would be a great guest here on XR Connections, as he is working with some great ideas for prototyping in the XR space. Bernard, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It really is my pleasure, Bernard. Bernard, how did you get involved with XR? Was there one experience that really changed everything for you that made you say, I really want to get into this?
Yeah, I would say, well, first of all, it was the first time I saw the Oculus DK1. That was kind of a big moment where I said, wow, this is a really cool piece of technology. And then I think the second moment that was really important, or that was really a kind of a wow effect, was when I saw the Vive for the first time. That was at another developer at their office. They had an early model of the Vive with the hand tracking and such. And because the DK1 I saw in the beginning was only didn't even have a positional tracking for the headset. So yeah, those experiences were pretty interesting. And the how I got to those experiences basically through my company. Well, as we develop prototypes using game technology and game engines, that's where game engines go on the VR platforms, and that's how you build for the VR platforms and augmented reality as well. So that's how we professionally also rolled into it. But those first moments were pretty interesting. Like maybe one, if I'm to share like one interesting anecdote there, is that the first time I actually got a VR headset on was at some event. Kind of at the end of the event, like somebody brought it and they said, hey, I have this device. And I said, okay, let me look at it. And I was really fascinated. And it was like the Tuscan Villa demo. But then I had to drive back home and I was so nauseated.
Oh. So
actually, yes, that was interesting. I learned there that if you get nauseated, it actually lasts for quite some time. And if you have to drive, it's pretty much like you're driving drunk. So that was that.
Good Lord.
Yes.
Has that happened again?
No, since then I never drove with that kind of feeling, because I know I need to turn off the headset. And it was also very early VR. So the way this demo worked is that you had this space that you can move around in using the arrow keys on the keyboard without actually moving in VR. And of course, a lot has changed since then in terms of people realizing what the optimal experiences are in VR, and it, definitely not walking around using a keyboard while just looking around in the headset, that makes most of the people sick.
Bernard, what year was this? How long ago was this?
2013.
You saw these experiences. Your company is already in business. Tell us a little bit about your company and how you started it, and then how you transformed into working in this space after seeing it.
Yeah. So basically my company, it's called PrivyLabs, and I started it, well, from my previous experience working at game companies as a programmer and a game designer. I noticed that I really liked the beginning of the development process, and that more the middle and the end of the process, I didn't really think it was that interesting. It was kind of straightforward at some points, or at least in the beginning of a concept of the development of a project, you have a lot of impact on the concept. So mm-hmm. The concept can be changed. There's also technical aspects that are interesting. Certain things need to be figured out. Later in the project, those don't need to be figured out. You just have to build it out. And then at the very end, you're fixing bugs, for example, and some bugs might only be seen by maybe 1 out of 100 people that actually play the game. So the actual amount of impact on the concept is very little at the end of a project, of course, which is how it should be. But I realized I really liked the beginning. I also was doing game jams, where you come together with people and you make a little game in 48 hours. And that I really thoroughly enjoyed that. And then from there, I said, oh, what if every day would be like a game jam? And that's basically how I started thinking, okay, if I'm just jamming, nobody's going to pay me for that. There needs to be some output that I can somehow sell. And then first I thought, oh, would I be able to just make a lot of game jam games and sell those afterwards? I thought, oh, probably not, because there are so many games. If I'm not mistaken, there was like around 2000 in the last game jam, in the last global game jam. That's how I came up with the idea to start a company that actually does tailor-made prototypes for clients. So people come to us when they have a concept in mind and they want to see how it works. If it works, maybe they want to pitch it. So that's what we do. We prototype for them. And then initially, well, having started in 2010, I started in Belgium. So I'm born and raised in Belgium. And then from there, we saw quite a lot of interest in the US, a lot of clients from the US. And that's how I started the US branch in 2016. The trend at that time was like Angry Birds that came out in 2010. Candy Crush in 2011. So everybody in the games industry making games wanted to at least try their luck in the mobile market. And even no matter if you're doing big console titles, they would want to enter the mobile market and at least try. And that was kind of this important change in the market or new big trend. And then the same thing happened with VR and AR. All of a sudden, everybody discovered VR and AR and see how cool these technologies are. And then in the games industry, yes, there was interest, a lot of people wanting to try something. Some of that has gone down a little bit, but then there's a much bigger market that also opened up where pretty much all companies or a lot of different markets started to see this technology and they wanted to know like, okay, what does this mean for me? What can we do with this technology? And that's where that really opened up a lot of opportunities for us to help those people by prototyping. But one thing that was going on in 2009 with the Global Game Jam is that I think it was the first year that Unity was available for Windows as well. The Unity engine was initially only for Mac, for OS X, and they released it for Windows and maybe the year before or something, but the Global Game Jam, they actually provided it to everybody for free. So people could use it for free. And I think that was really interesting for Unity. Myself, I didn't use Unity at the time for that game jam because I wanted to go with the technology I knew at the time. I saw a lot of people try to get up to speed with Unity during the game jam at the same time and not getting as far. So I think that was an okay choice. But Unity is, of course, a great technology. So since then, as soon as we started PrivyLabs, we started using Unity as our technology of choice. And indeed, games is what we mentioned. But of course, we pretty soon noticed that there's much more interest in game technology, not just inside of the games industry. So when it comes to real-time, two-dimensional or three-dimensional visualization with interaction and such, well, that's what you need a game engine for. Pretty soon broadened our I would say our mission statement to do prototyping with game technology as opposed to only prototyping for games.
So let's get into that. Let's talk about using the principles of the rapid prototyping and using game engines for prototyping for other XR uses.
We are pretty much applying the same principles as that we do with game development I would say the general principle of rapid prototyping, if you approach it from a non-technical point of view, is that prototyping is about representing a product or a software without having to develop it with all the details. So it's about reducing the scope. It's about developing something that would not be the product you want to put on the market, but you develop it in order to learn something about it. First of all, to see whether some ideas and assumptions made about the product, to see if they're valid, maybe to test it actually with users, which is great. What's key about prototyping is also about determining what to put in your prototype. It's about reducing the scope from the large scope or the vision that you have about how the product might exist in the market, hypothetically, and the essence to convey the concept without having to do all the content and all the details. And if the main thing is not about creating something really pretty, then you can do it really simple and just experiment with the interaction, see if people are going to get it. So that's how we apply it to XR as well. And of course, XR has its own challenges. So if we're talking VR, there's nausea that I mentioned earlier. Like, how do you do, for example, a forklift simulator prototype or a forklift simulator without getting nauseated? Well, where you essentially do have a vehicle that needs to move. So there are some strategies for that, and those sometimes you have to figure that out a bit. And so that means that what makes prototyping for XR different than prototyping for games, I would say, is the unique challenges of the technology. But whether that is VR games or VR simulation, some of those challenges are, of course, the same. When we're talking about augmented reality, it's pretty similar. It's in many cases, it gets more technical, the prototyping, when it's about knowing the technical limitations and seeing whether a certain vision is possible or how to achieve a certain vision. Sometimes people have an idea of AR that's not necessarily limited by the technical limitations, and that kind of needs to be tested and seen how can you achieve that. And that's kind of an interesting challenge also there in the beginning of a project. So you're not imagining something that's technically impossible. So then the question is, how do you make it possible? How do you play within the limitations of the technology to get the best out of the technology, basically?
Thank you, Bernard. One thing that I thought was really interesting about your presentation, I think the listeners would find interesting as well as your thoughts on, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, but it was something about kind of real versus realistic.
Yeah, the point I was making in my presentation at AWE was about physics and experience in terms of aiming for natural physics or natural experience as opposed to realistic physics or a realistic experience. So if it's realistic, it would be really a simulation of real life, so to speak, or in the case of a forklift training, it would be, yeah, literally implementing everything the same way a real forklift works. But then the natural physics is about maybe violating that a little bit, maybe changing that a little bit to make it feel better. In the case of a forklift, we, for example, were able to reduce most of the nausea by reducing the accelerations while turning. So you could go straight and accelerate pretty quickly, but if you're turning, a real forklift would accelerate pretty much in the same way, but we limited that quite a lot while turning, because turning and accelerating in VR while you're not turning and accelerating in real life proved to be more nausea-inducing than just moving forward, for example, or traveling in the direction in which you're looking, which is milder. And similarly, there was a case that I had covered about rowing physics. We had like a boat with an oar, and you could use that in VR. You can pick it up with your two hands with the Oculus Touch controllers or the Vive controllers, and then you can start rowing, and we would do rowing physics. And there we also deviated a bit from the real physics to make it more simple or to make it more natural and easier. For example, one of the things, if you may have experienced, if you went kayaking or on a river, that depending on the nature of the river, but sometimes you'll see other people get stuck or you'll get stuck in the side, and then you kind of have to get out of that, and that's kind of annoying sometimes, and in a game you don't want to do that. So what we did, we added some certain forces that if you get closer to the shore, there would actually be a force that pushes you back more towards the middle in a very gentle way, in a way that you don't really notice it. But I think in the end, it's about, when it's for games, it's often about empowering the user, about giving the user the feeling that, oh yeah, I totally rock at using a kayak, while maybe in real life they wouldn't. And it's the same thing with racing games. There's a lot of things that, a lot of assistive features in games that are used. And whether that's for entertainment experience or an XR or a VR simulation, for example, for forklift safety, you still want that to be true. You still want it to be like, yes, you want to be more true to the actual physics of a forklift, but you definitely want to reduce those accelerations a little bit while turning, for example, in order to make sure people don't get too sick when they go through your safety training.
Thank you, Bernard. Can you tell us about some of your clients, some of the recent projects that you've done, what kind of problems that you can help to solve through your prototyping process, and how clients can get in touch with you?
Yeah, so first of all, in terms of our clients, we work for a range of different types of clients so that need prototyping. One group is early stage startups that don't have a development team yet, and they have an idea and they kind of want to see it and they want to pitch it or kind of they want to explore it. Then we also have larger corporations where it's hard to set up a team to just for one prototype or for a few prototypes. So where it's just a bit too bureaucratic to quickly do anything, especially for a small project, and to do that efficiently. And then also we have a lot of clients in research and scientific research. So in terms of the, maybe more in the middle size of company, we have one of our clients, it's called XR Health. So they do all kinds of experiences for healthcare, for therapy, using VR and AR as well. So that's a case where we did a whole bunch of different prototypes that I would show around to see which ones are most interesting for actual use in therapy. Last year, we had our first government contract in the US for the National Institutes of Health. What we do for the NIH, which is about visualizing how decisions in life can have a different impact depending on your DNA. So they call that gene-environment interaction. So for example, certain people may gain weight faster, for example, as a very simple example. And then that is kind of conveyed to you in VR, and then you see a mirror and you can kind of see how that impacts you over time. So there's a couple of examples there. Another one that we did with Yale University, it was called Invite Only VR. It's about vaping and peer pressure. So it's an experience for a serious game for teenagers, high schoolers more precisely, which is about learning about different strategies that people might use for peer pressure, like how peer pressure is conveyed and recognizing that, and then coming up with ways to overcome that and to actually practice the skills in VR, talking to other characters, practicing those skills and refusing in different ways. And this is to give teenagers the tools to refuse. And at the same time, it's also an educational experience. So they learn about vaping and what it contains and things like that. That was a pretty interesting experience. That's one that we did with Yale. It was funded by Oculus.
Where can we see more of your work, and how can folks get in touch with you to discuss rapid prototype?
Yes. So the best way to find more information and to see actual examples with your own eyes is to just go to our website, previewlabs.com, and to our blog, which is on the website. And then you can filter also by virtual reality or augmented reality. And quite a few of those blog posts have videos where you can also just take a quick look. So that's a good way. Otherwise, to get in touch, there's also a contact form on our webpage. That is the easiest way. That goes straight into my inbox. So
fantastic. We'll put links to the blog and to the site in the show notes as well. As we mentioned, Bernard and I met through the AWE conference. How was your experience with that, Bernard? And following up on that, how are you following AR, VR, XR developments? Can you recommend any sources of information, people to follow? Do you attend meetups?
Yeah, so first of all, regarding the AWE conference, I think it was really amazing, the platform that they have to organize the conference online. It worked really well. I mean, the talks were pre-recorded, but then every speaker had to be standby at a certain time. So as soon as the video ended, which we could follow through Zoom, then we had to be standby for people to respond. And the nice thing was there was like an online chat where you could see the questions already pop up during the event. So I could actually already think about my answers in advance a little bit, which was really great to help people get their questions answered properly. And then also just being able to see the different people that are there and the company they're with that are in the room, that was really nice for networking afterwards. So that was a good way to replace kind of the conversations you have after the talk where people come to you and you talk to them. And so this is how we were able to connect as well. So I think that was really nice. And I think it is pretty interesting to see how people are applying technology nowadays to be able to safely work from home and at the same time meet people online. And I think this was one of the more successful platforms I've seen. Some actually use VR as well. But those are also pretty interesting to see. And it's not always ideal, but as I mentioned before, we started recording, sometimes you can learn the most from things that aren't ideal. Then you can really see, okay, this is actually an important feature. And I feel it's missing now, but now I know it, why it's important. And then for your second question about how do I get the latest information about XR? Well, first of all, through Preview Labs, through my work in the company and following up on the projects that we do, people come to us early on and they want to try things that haven't been tried before. So there's a lot of firsthand experience. And of course, we share some of that on our blog. But otherwise, in terms of meeting other people that do similar work or do work in the space, I definitely go to conferences. So one that I go to every year is the Game Developers Conference, where there's also people that work in VR and AR. There's also, for example, closer to home, as I live in Connecticut, Boston, there's the VR and AR meetups. That's where I go occasionally. There's also some in New York. I haven't explored those yet, but I've heard a lot of good things about it. Of course, Oculus Connect as well, because we did some work with Oculus, and that's a conference I've been going to, I think, for the past 4 years. That's pretty exciting to see the new announcement in the keynote. So yeah, I think those are some of the key things. And I think just keeping an eye on your social media and what other people are posting about new developments. And for me, it's really a lot of, at those conferences, I also just talk a lot to other people and see what they are doing. And that way you get a lot of information direct from the source. Something I like because I can combine it with networking, which I enjoy very much.
Great. Well, thank you, Bernard. And if we ever get back to meeting in person, we'll have to meet up in Boston, or we've got to get you down to the our lab in New York and attending one of the AWE nights or DJ Smith's great New York VR meetups. We'll have to meet in person.
For sure. That would be awesome. Yeah.
Finally, Bernard, what's exciting to you? Are you anticipating any new releases? What's exciting, or what's excited you so far this year?
I think one of the things that was pretty exciting, or a device I last tried, was the HoloLens 2. Mm-hmm. I really liked the comparison with the first HoloLens, for which we did a couple of projects. We haven't done any for HoloLens 2 yet, but I was excited about the hand tracking and the finger tracking, and it seems to be a bit of a recurring theme now, of course, with Oculus also doing this and then the Vive Index. So I think, hand tracking and finger tracking is definitely something interesting. And seeing how people take like the head-mounted AR devices or how they take those to the next level, that's still something where there's a lot of things that would need to be achieved to make it ideal. And I think a lot of things that we're going to see in the next 5 to 10 years. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Bernard. I really appreciate you joining us here. You can find Bernard at previewlabs.com?
Correct.
All right. Thanks so much, Bernard.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to episode 16 of XR Connections. Again, I'm Liam O'Malley. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find more information about the podcast, show notes of previous episodes at marsandmercury.com. For this episode, the call was recorded with Skype. I use a Scarlett microphone with the Focusrite interface. We edited it using Logic Pro 10X, and the podcast is published by Anchor. Thanks again for listening. Please do reach out to me and connect. The music is by Dr. Mars. Thank you.